Perth Overnight with John Lewis for Christian James Hairdressing Mount Lawley. 6 PR.
Good morning, 24 minutes after 4 here at 6 PR on a Saturday morning, early Saturday morning. And we've spoken to some great people on the program. We've spoken to the star of the movie 2012. We've had so many interesting people. And the GPS voice has been on the program too, Aussie Karen, which has been really nice. We have an absolute legend joining us now. This legend is often referred to as the greatest race car driver of all time, having proven himself a winner at all levels of competition. Now, his skills and versatile driving have produced some of racing history's most legendary accomplishments. He's won the Indianapolis 500, the Daytona 500, the Formula One World Championship. These are just some of the amazing races that Mario Andretti has won, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, John.
Mario, does crossing the finish line first, does that always feel the same, or does every race have a different emotion for you?
Every race is almost like a new experience because it's, you know, and no matter how fortunate you've been in your career, the wins are usually still far and few in between. So that's the only thing that I, you know, would strive for. And but when it comes, it's the ultimate satisfaction, and you certainly, that's what keeps you going. That's what keeps you wanting coming back, because you just want to experience that over and over as many times as possible. Nothing like a win.
What does it take to win a race, to truly be a number one champion? I'm guessing there might be a little bit of luck in there too.
Well, of course there's some luck involved, and that's the abstract of it, but you know, so many elements have to go together. Obviously you have to have the team that functions 100% that particular day, and you have to have a car that's capable and have it set up properly, and then last, you know, stay under you mechanically. So then, of course, avoid some of potential disasters that could be happening in front of you, whatever, during the event. So all of these elements have to play for you to be able to win. That's why whenever that victory comes, it's so sweet.
How important is fast thinking, and are there any skills that racing drivers use to speed up their thinking?
I think reaction time is very important, no question, and of course I think it can serve you quite well sometimes and be able to avoid situations that happen in front of you, or also be able to catch the car if it goes out of control. All of these things play, and as far as developing that, I think it's a personal thing. Some individuals do better than others. The only way you can really stay sharp is being able to just be in a race car as long as possible. I've raced for, actually, I could say 41 years. It was 36 years uninterrupted, and you know, I was really hardly ever out of a race car more than 2 weeks in that lifespan. So, and by being in the car, being, you know, exposed to all the needs of driving a racing car quick, then seemed like a lot of things slow down, and that's how you are able to react properly. There's another thing that I must say to you, that sometimes overreaction can be lethal. So it's all about just toning everything just properly, because I think overreaction can be worse than slow reaction.
So how do you remain calm then? What is the advice you would give to being calm? Where do you find that?
I think you find that from practice. It's like any business. The more you practice, the more confidence you have of yourself, of what you're doing, your capabilities. And when you have that confidence, then you relax. And when you relax, that's when you do your best work. And so, again, it's all about just really being committed, being focused, But I say practice, practice, practice.
How about your early life, Mario? Because you're an American racing driver, you're born in Italy, and from a very early age, you and your twin brother were right into speed, really, weren't you?
Yes, we were. In fact, it's a very unlikely situation for us to have really sort of fallen in love at a young age with a sport whereby the family didn't even own a car at the time. I mean, we were sort of victims of World War II. I was born when the war began in 1940, basically, and we were affected by the war the first 5-6 years of our lives, and then we spent 7 years in a refugee camp in Italy, before we moved to America. So, again, our upbringing was such that it certainly was not conducive to, being next to anyone that was part of the sport. But it just something captured our imagination, and seemed like that's one thing that I always wanted to do. I always wanted to emulate one of my heroes early on. And when we came to America, immediately my brother and I and some buddies, we started working and built our own racing car. And we started driving locally, which is very popular here in America, especially in those days, half a mile oval dirt track. And that's how it all began for me in 1959, in fact.
It's amazing how many people make it big in their success from having very little. I think you're a shining example of it's not what you have that makes you great, it's what you haven't got that makes you great.
Yes, and when you work for it because you have this ambitious goal, then you have that much more appreciation for it. And if you achieve those goals, like I've been very fortunate to do in my life, and then, of course, you consider yourself the luckiest man alive, and that's the way it's been with me. I've always set very ambitious goals that at times I think I would not dare call it openly, but at the same time, I think I've reached my ultimate goals in life, in my career, but I've never taken anything for granted.
Mario Andretti, you haven't, of course, always come first in the races, and in the early days, you had to be satisfied with less than that. So what was it about you that you had to change, and how did you change to become the number one champion you became?
Well, I think as you go through the ranks in the sport, it's just like going to school. You know, you start at the elementary school and so forth, and you progress first, second, third. And every year you look at yourself, am I better off than I was last year? Have I learned that much more? And that's really how I looked at my career. You know, as I moved on to more challenging categories and so forth, I always left wherever I left by having had some success. Otherwise, you don't move on. You don't graduate, from one grade to another unless you've been successful. And that's really how I measured everything. I said, I think did enough there, and it was good enough to move on, and it was a matter of feeling like I had progressed. And then you have your ultimate goals. You know, sometimes they seem very, very distant, and even at times certainly unattainable, but I think it's perseverance, believing in yourself, the passion that drives you, and that ultimately has a chance of getting you there.
So do you think that's what took you into so many different racing styles?
That was an individual thing. I certainly, my goal was to specialize in open wheel single seaters, a la Indy cars or Formula One, but I really wanted to challenge myself. I love driving so much that there were other categories such as sports prototypes that I enjoy tremendously, some of the long distance races, and then again also some I dabbled in some stock cars, obviously, that was becoming very popular. And so it was all a matter of challenging myself and also being very curious. And I derived a lot of satisfaction just by going there, not just racing, but also winning in categories that were not considered my specialty.
Mario, what was it like racing in Italy? Because coming back to your birthland, you sometimes do a double take and think, oh, I'm racing in the country now where I was born.
Well, you can just imagine that the satisfaction that I derived from that, because, as you say, this is where I really fell in love. That's where I saw my very first Formula One race, and also watched the venerable, the classic Mille Miglia, you know, the 1,000-mile race around Italy that obviously no longer exists. But and going back, you know, it was just something very special, because I would race at Monza, which was still the sanctuary there, still the track where the Grand Prix has been held. And but I raced there in San Marino and so forth, and I won. I won in Italy in sports cars. I won Formula One, and also I clinched my world championship right in Monza. As fate would have it, it just happened there. So you can imagine that, you know, my ultimate satisfaction was really winning the Italian Grand Prix.
What about frightening moments? You seem like a very calm person who might not actually get frightened. Have you had a moment where you're there in the vehicle and your life flashed in front of your eyes?
John, I've had many of those.
Okay.
Yeah, I can tell you. And but also, that's another area where I feel so, so incredibly fortunate, because you know, I raced through decades in the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, where things were not as safe as they are today. Safety was not addressed as vigorously. And we used to lose, especially back in the 60s, in our type of racing here in America, oval dirt track racing with sprint cars, midgets. We used to lose 5, 6 guys a year, you know, the top drivers. And you know, you almost resign yourself to, you know, maybe, you know, you're going to be one of them. Not that, you know, that you want to think about it, but, and so, again, I'm, you know, I feel very fortunate that I was one of those that dodged a lot of bullets. And I just had actually a very interesting, spectacular incident about 4 years ago at Indianapolis, when I was testing a car for my son's team, Michael's team, and I was potentially had to substitute for one of his drivers, Tony Kanaan, because I had a broken wrist to qualify at Indy in 2003. And on the very last lap of that day, practice, I was following another driver, Kenny Brack, and he scattered an engine going into turn one at over 220 miles an hour, and I was dodging his pieces, and something went underneath my car and unstuck the car, and I started flying up through the air about 220 miles an hour, four flips backwards, and but the car landed on its wheels, and that's the one time that I thought, I'm going to have to meet my creator, you know. But I escaped that one too. So, like I said, very, very lucky.
Good time to start saying your prayers and making up, isn't it? Well done.
Yes, indeed.
Glad you landed on your wheels. What's the top speed that you can recall that you've driven your vehicle to?
Yes, actually, I have the graph of that particular. In 1993, I qualified for the Michigan 500, which is a very high-speed 2-mile oval track, 234.7 miles an hour average, but my straight-line speed was 253.
253.
So, yeah, that's as quick as I've gone on a closed circuit.
Can you see anything at that speed? Do you see at that? I mean, surely the...
That was quick. That was actually quite quick. They don't go as quick anymore. They're much more curtailed today, you know, by rules.
Yes.
You know, but we were reaching certain limits that were crazy, you know, in those days. And and we were at the threshold of really realizing what the maximum that a human element could deal with.
Oh, yeah.
We were pulling almost 5.5 G's through the corners. You know,
easily.
So.
There'd be serious concerns about just blacking out.
Yeah, it's no question.
Mario, absolute pleasure talking to you this morning. For those people tuned in this morning who are thinking, well, you know, I like to drive a bit fast on the road. Have you got any advice for those people who like to speed when they're on the freeway? And, of course, it's a dangerous thing.
My advice is clearly not to do that. That's not the place to speed because it's not just yourself. It's just that you have no idea the level of skill of the drivers that either come in your way or you're passing. And I think you're just asking for trouble all around. I don't condone that at all, believe it or not. I don't.
Good. I knew that's how you'd answer it, but you're quite right. Of course, when you're driving in the in competitions, you understand that those around you have a very high level of understanding.
Exactly, John. The road is not the place to show your driving prowess. I mean, it's go on a racetrack, go somewhere where you have control conditions, then you can enjoy it. And then when you come away from there, you'll be a much better driver on the road by driving normally.
Mario Andretti, where are you at now? What are you doing in your life these days?
Life is good, and it's my plate's quite full. I still work, and I don't think I will ever retire as far as going fishing type of thing. I'm very active in some businesses that I have. I have a petroleum business primarily and a winery in Napa Valley in California.
That's right. Good for you.
Yes, my home is in Pennsylvania. That's where I am now. And I work with global companies where I do extensive travel. I work with Bridgestone, Firestone, and Chevron, Texaco, and several other companies.
I appreciate your time very much. Thank you, Mario Andretti.
Thank you for having me on. Hi, this is Mario Andretti, and you are listening to John Lewis 6PR.